And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
This week, we're crossing the nation from the swamplands of Florida to the heartland and finally to California as we bring to life the stories that deserve attention in the realms of nature. We update the story of the ivory-billed woodpecker, visit a tropical rainforest in Iowa, and end up in Southern California, where a community is leading the way towards a powerful alliance of local government and the people it serves. And of course, the news. It's all coming up when your Voice of the Earth commences following this brief intermission.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
It's been a quiet week across America. No hurricanes or sensational storms. No floods or devastation. So not much of a sensational nature in the news. And actually, with just a month left before the midterm elections, silence from the environmental front may be the worst sound of all. Yesterday, President Bush held a news conference, and as has happened so often before, during election time, not a single question about the environment. And quite frankly, you can't fault the president about that. It may be more appropriate to throw some light on the opposition, which seems perhaps afraid to raise serious issues about global warming or the need for dramatic national leadership for energy independence. At least a whimper or two about the devastation of West Virginia's mountains to the mountaintop removal methods of the coal companies. Most of the real political action is happening in the states, which are being forced to cut their own path to sustainability. And today, we take a look at how one California city is continuing its leadership role in forging a functional future for its citizens. We talk with the mayor of Irvine, California, in segment 3. And who'd ever thought we'd be hearing about the tropical rainforests of Iowa? Well, it's a dream that's becoming a reality. During segment 2, we talk with the executive director of Earth Park as he prepares to help create one of the nation's most extraordinary environmental learning centers. And then following the news, we bring you an update from those swamps of Florida on that elusive ivory-billed woodpecker from Dr. Jeffrey Hill of Auburn University. And he invites you to officially join his research team to determine once and for all whether the ivory bill is back. It's all coming up, but as always, we bring you this week's Nature Newsmakers. So now, the news. For people who still doubt the validity of global warming, the proof may come in the form of a bill in the mail from their insurance providers who are becoming vocal with warnings that those who must pay for the damages wrought by hurricanes, floods, and forest fires aren't willing to play politics with the facts. A report issued jointly by the Alliance Group, an insurer, and the World Wildlife Fund warned that global warming will push up insurance premiums in high-risk areas like coastal Florida and other hurricane-prone parts of the United States. The report, entitled Climate Change and Insurance, An Agenda for Action in the United States, made it clear that there is direct correlation between climate change, forest fires, storm surges, and people's livelihoods, said Carter Roberts, president of the World Wildlife Fund in the U.S. Beyond setting the correct premiums on areas expected to bear the brunt of global climate change, both said insurers need to work with governments to make sure construction in those areas dealt with the risk and did not continue as business as usual. The report stressed that government-subsidized flood insurance may have encouraged people to live in high-risk zones and suggested that these subsidies end. So consider yourself warned. And in a similar vein, serious opposition regarding climate change is melting, in large part due to the undeniable increased melting of glaciers around the world. As a matter of fact, Dr. George Kaiser, a glaciologist at the University of Innsbruck in Austria, said, "We are in a terminal meltdown. Glaciers are going to melt and melt until they are all gone. There are not any glaciers getting bigger anymore." Dr. Kaser said that 99.99% of all glaciers were now shrinking. Dr. Kaser concludes as well that this terminal condition is exacerbated by human contributions to the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere. Lest anyone still offer objections, we suggest that a trip to Glacier National Park may be instructive. Of the 150 glaciers that once defined the park, only 27 remain. So there. And if that isn't enough, did you know that the repeating extinction of mammal species every 2.5 million years, followed by a huge increase in mammal species, a phenomenon which has baffled scientists for a very long time, is in fact due to periodic wobbles in the Earth's orbit? And here's where it gets complex. It seems that when the Earth is in a fairly circular orbit around the Sun, the summer and winter temperatures are more stable, which causes the glaciers to expand, oceans to decline, and changes in rainfall. Now, as the orbit becomes more elliptical, the seasons become more extreme. Add to this the changes in the tilt of the Earth, which is currently at 23 degrees, and which changes every million years, and you have a montage of overlapping species fluctuations that will take thousands of years to prove. But all is not lost. Scientists discover 2 to 3 new bird species each year. The most recent newly identified species comes from a remote cloud forest in Colombia. The little finch, recently identified, is a dandy example of senseless wonder. More colorful than a punk rock star, the little bird sports vivid red cap, yellow breast and belly feathers, with a broad head-to-tail black stripe that puts this little beastie boy among the top new fashions of the fall season. Given the name Yaracuyas after the indigenous tribe that shares the forests, the new bird species, which is considered quite rare, is provided with natural protection as 200,000 acres of national park was recently declared, which happens to be exactly where the Yaracuyas bushfinch chooses to live. And this week marked a momentous migration of 18 whooping cranes, which were headed south on a 1,228-mile journey from Wisconsin to Florida. A couple of factors make this noteworthy. First, these 18 make up a sizable proportion of the total of 214 wild whoopers, which have grown from a very few individuals over the last 40 years and represent the entire population of wild whooping cranes. But perhaps equally as amazing is that these young whoopers took off on their first leg of the journey following their surrogate mothers, namely 4 ultralights, to which the birds have been carefully bonded since birth. If all goes well, these young whooping cranes will follow their adoptive moms to Florida, overwinter there, then return on their own in the spring. We say bon voyage and Godspeed. And that's the news. A few reminders. While you're camped down in the swamps of Florida searching for the ivory-billed woodpecker or building that first morning fire in the high country to put some hot Java into your fingers, it's always nice to have a little helper getting that fire started. The best little friend you can have is the air grill blower. A few cranks and a whirlwind of directed air takes those embers of kindling and turns them into the perfect fire. You can have one for free if you are the 5th emailer to send an email to me with air grill blower in the subject line. Do it now. Email to wildsidenews@cox.net. That's wildsidenews@cox.net with air grill blower in the subject line. And you just may have this handy fire helper at your next fire. Next week, we're surveying the state of the environment in the upcoming elections. It's a very important show. You'll want to tune in. So now, we head on out to Alabama and Auburn University. A couple of weeks ago, I had a great breaking news story coming out of Auburn University and now ultimately Florida about a new sighting of the ivory-billed woodpecker, and we had a great interview with Dr. Jeffrey Hill. It was a really fascinating show. Well, I thought it'd be important for us to get back with Dr. Hill and see what's happened since he broke this news. Dr. Hill, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Hi, Sydney. Glad to be back.
Well, of course, the first thing that I'm sure everybody wants to know is any new significant sightings since your last report?
No, not from my group, not along the Choctahatchee. This is a very quiet period in the swamp, not just ivory-billed, but most species of birds are very quiet this time of year. We still have full leaf coverage in the forest. It's hard to see much. So this is the time of year we expect to detect these birds the least, and we're not down there very much right now. My students are busy in school, and I'm busy dealing with our announcement.
Well, since that time, you've had a chance to present your findings to some fairly large forums. What's been the response by the scientific community?
Well, it's been very encouraging and very supportive. So we made our announcement through a press release, I guess it was 2 weeks ago now, and got some coverage in newspapers. And in response to that, I had hundreds of emails and phone calls, and every single email I got has been pleasant and positive. Not everybody believes we have ivory bills. There's a lot of skeptics out there, and that's understandable. But I was a little afraid we might draw out, I don't know, anger or just sort of inappropriate response, but I've had none of that. Whether people are skeptics or believers, they've sent me nice, encouraging emails.
Mm. Well, I had the opportunity to look at some of the bird blogs which are out there, and there's been a very interesting debate going on there, which I'm sure you're aware of.
I try not to look at blogs too much because I was doing a little bit right before our announcement, and actually it gets a little upsetting and a little depressing. And it really, I think, doesn't represent the views of 99% of the people interested in birds in North America.
It's been interesting, and just because I happen to see this on one of the blogs, birdforum.org. This is an interesting take. They suggest, one of the threads, the suggestions, was that in reality you were working for the anti-development forces in Florida because there just so happens that there is a major airport that's being planned in that area, and that you were, all of this was being concocted to try to create some distraction and legal means to stop the development. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really crazy coincidence, I admit. I had no knowledge of the airport development until a reporter called me up and explained it to me after our announcement. Apparently, this airport was approved 10 days before our announcement. But I'm not a Florida resident. I don't read Florida newspapers, and I had no idea about this.
That's just amazing, because now this has become central to that debate. Isn't that something?
Yeah, and I don't even know how central it is. I'm no part of that debate to this point. I imagine I'm going to get drawn into it.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, what are your plans now as you go onward here into the future?
Well, we're trying to get organized for a much larger, more organized search for the winter and spring 07 season. And we're actually right now trying to hire a group of full-time technicians to assist us with this search.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk about what your needs are and how that's progressing and what they can expect, and go ahead and give some details.
Yeah, the main thing we're looking for is a time commitment by physically fit people. So we really need to have degree of commitment, because we need to put people in these areas and have them work day after day so they become familiar. So, yeah, some continuity. So we're looking for people that can commit from early January through May, and we'll certainly consider somewhat abbreviated commitments. If they have to shave a month off at the beginning or end, we may consider that. But we really would like people that can make this whole commitment. Now, ideally, we would take people who are the top field ornithologists, the top bird identifiers in the country, but I'm afraid we're not going to get 16 people like that. That's how many techs we're looking to hire.
16, yeah, that's a good crew.
Yeah, we'll be a good group if we can pull it off. So really, I think our number one requirement is that the people that sign up for this be physically fit and willing to live under fairly harsh conditions. These people are going to be camping in tents down in the swamp for weeks at a time, and the ability to do that supersedes anything else. We can actually train people to identify these birds and know what they sound like. I'd rather have people come in with excellent bird skills, but really, you know, an excellent birder who does nothing but complain about the swamp and the cold and stuff would be worse than a novice birder who is fine with the rough conditions.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Now, you're also, interestingly enough, offering a small stipend to allow these people to spend that time.
That's right. We are offering a very small stipend. We're offering $1,200 a month with no benefits. These will just come in as temporary employees of the university. Interestingly, this is the stipend I've offered throughout my career. I just adjusted for inflation over the years. A very small stipend. And I've never been without temporary workers for my various projects, much less exciting and nationally prominent than the Ivoryville search.
Mm-hmm. And what will these people spend their time doing? That's quite a commitment. That's about 5 months. How will they spend their time?
Well, we're still developing our approach, and actually if people have ideas, they can share them with me about how they think the Ivoryville search should best go. But we want to be very careful to have a quiet presence in the swamp. We don't want to pour in there with an army and surround these shy birds and potentially drive them out of areas. So our ideas right now are to subdivide a pretty good section of the swamp into search territories, assign search territories to our workers, and then they'll go in each day in their fairly small territory, probably less than a square mile, and just very quietly move about and try to detect these birds.
So you'll be working with technology such as recorders, I suppose, maybe some parabolic mics, cameras?
Not parabolic mics. Those would be big and awkward. Our main technical approach to this whole search is going to be remote cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something we completely lacked last year. We had just a very limited number of conventional cameras. But there's now very good game cameras available that will allow you to take a time-lapse still photography series of an object. So these are the sort of cameras we could put facing cavities or feeding trees and get multiple days' worth of images. So we can set these things and leave them and come back and retrieve them. And if a bird has come in to a cavity or a feeding tree, we'll know it. Its image will have been captured. I believe that the image of an ivory bill is going to be very anticlimactic. I think it's going to be a little black and white still picture of a bird on a feeding tree or going to a cavity. It's going to be very boring, but it's going to be definitive, hopefully.
Well, that'll change the history of the ivory bill definitively, and that'll be real interesting. And I wish you great luck on your efforts here and great success. For people who want to contact you and perhaps look into your research, but as well who may be considering joining you in the field as a researcher, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Well, my graduate student, Brian Rolek, who was the main searcher last year in the swamp, is the person receiving applications for the search. And Brian's email address is Brian Rolek, all one word, BRIANROLEK, at Gmail, GMAIL. com. Anybody interested in Ivoryville can also go to our website that we posted, www.auburn.edu/Ivoryville, and that links to Dan Mennell's Sound web page. It has a description of how to apply for a position. It has, for those who can only come down for a few days and want to search, we have suggestions for how people that aren't part of the organized search can get into this area. We want anybody interested to come in, and you know, it's very likely a birder visiting is going to get the key picture that we really need.
One of the great things about the website is the fact that you've really posted all of your relevant research. So for people who are interested, they can go there and really become part of this and follow it. It's a terrific place to learn more.
Yeah, we thought the best approach was just to lay it all out there so skeptics and believers alike can see what the evidence is and assess it for themselves.
Well, Dr. Jeffrey Hill with Auburn University, I want to thank you for lending your voice here, and we'll keep in touch.
Oh, yeah, I'll be happy to give you an update in a few months when we have something new from the Choctahatchee.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
You'll find links to Dr. Hill's website on today's show page. Global warming is real, but a tropical rainforest at Iowa by 2010? You can count on it. You'd best stay tuned to hear what's coming. when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.